as esports fans, we're kind of responsible for educating others and getting them involved, I think, because this is our community and we should be trying to make it bigger. There is a ring fencing aspect to it sometimes. It's a bit like when you have your favorite band and suddenly everyone else discovers them and you're just like, no, you're not a real fan, I am. There is that problem occasionally, I will say, in esports, which is why I was terrified of starting Counter-Strike in the first place. But then I got in and it became a dream. So we do need to be more welcoming, I think, to new people and show them what it's all about, which is why I'm always trying to encourage people to go to live events.
From the marketing agency 256, it's Gaming and Marketing, a show about gaming, marketing, and just about everything in between. We speak to experts in the space about how and why interactivity and video games are more relevant than ever, in culture, but also in business. And hopefully, you'll walk away with a better understanding of why play matters. I'm Jamin Warren, and our guest today is Frankie Ward, an esports host and presenter. She's hosted and covered events such as the ESL Hearthstone Premiership Final, the PC Gaming Show at E3, and the ESL Intel Extreme Masters CSGO Major Championship. Previously, she was a producer at Twitch and now streams on the platform as a Twitch partner. Frankie starts us off by talking about how she got to where she is today. Tell me a little bit about your background. I presume you don't just decide that you want to be someone who, you know, hosts esports events or presents at video game shows. What was your background? How did you get into the space? Was it something that you always wanted to do, or did it kind of come more haphazardly?
Haphazard is definitely a good way of putting it. Well, I was a producer for about 8 years. I was at the BBC for 4, and I did a project about League of Legends, which is one of the biggest video games in the world and probably the most established esport, especially because it's huge in China and in the Asian region. And I was covering it because it was at Wembley. It was quarterfinals of their World Championships in 2015. And so I had to learn what this game was really quickly. And I'd always played video games. I hadn't really discovered much about esports. I sort of heard about it in passing, but didn't know anything. And then when I was there, I loved it so much. I just thought, you know what? I should move on from where I am now. And if I was to do that, I'd love to work in gaming. And so I went to work for Twitch, as they were the platform that everyone was watching this tournament on. So I became a producer for them. And about a year and a half later, they closed a load of jobs, including mine. But then I just thought about it and thought, what would I want to do more than anything? And it's talking about video games. So I essentially fired off some emails. And a week later, I was booked for multiple shows. And then I started traveling and I haven't really stopped.
You made an interesting point there. You know, I think for folks outside of the space, they often conflate video games and esports as kind of being one and the same, right? Like, oh, of course, if you play video games, you watch esports. But it sounds like there are lots of people. I definitely fall in this category as someone who's played video games for a long period of time. But it just so happens that, you know, of all the games I played, you know, the ones that became popular esports weren't necessarily the ones that I was into. And you have to kind of like back into it and figure out like, oh, how do I apply my love of video games to this new competitive public version of it?
Mm. Yes, there are a lot of players who I've met who wouldn't necessarily call themselves mainstream gamers. They just play the game that they're good at.
Right. One of the things, you know, when you're a host for other types of sports, there isn't a ton, I'd say, of like hand holding, right? So, you know, when people turn on, say, like a football game, or they turn on, you know, could be like cricket or anything else, there's an expectation for viewers that you sort of understand the basics, right? They don't need to tell you exactly what everything is. But I think for folks who may be coming to something like League of Legends for the first time, or Counter-Strike or Overwatch League, if you haven't played those games before, even if you're familiar with games, it can be a bit overwhelming. You may not understand exactly how things are happening. I was curious for you, how do you strike that balance between being just as appealing to someone who's been playing the game for years and years and years and someone for whom this is the first time they're ever watching a competitive version of play?
Well, because it's my job to host, that's why I always say it's my job to ask questions. So I've got analysts, so if there's something I don't understand, then I can always ask them and I can help them put it into layman's terms for the audience as well. I think one of the amazing things about esports is the balance of the color commentator, i.e. the analyst, and the play-by-play caster who's talking about what's literally happening in game. We have such established pairings, and so they are so good at explaining to the viewer what is happening and why it's happening. So even if you've never actually watched Counter-Strike before, they're always very, very aware that we might have new viewers because Counter-Strike is an incredibly easy game to watch and to enjoy, but there's so much depth to it. There's so much to discover, as well as the legacy of the teams and the players that we're seeing. So for me, I always want to make sure that anyone watching is going to understand that. And so I will work closely with the desk where I can to get extra information that's going to feed into the analysis, as opposed to just entertaining the audience, if that makes sense. But the nice thing is, like, the audience, if they have questions, they can hit us up on Twitter. Like, it's so easy to get in touch with us. It's so easy.
How would you describe the esports audience? Or do you feel like it's too diverse at this point to really talk about it in a coherent or cohesive way?
I think that the esports audience is, it varies from esports to esports. So I'll use Counter-Strike as an example. Counter-Strike, when you are part of that audience, you're part of a club. I feel like you are part of a community. I know some people who are in Counter-Strike would disagree with me, but you feel like you're part of something, which was why it was actually quite hard for me to start in it, because people didn't recognize me. They didn't know who I was. There was so much resistance to me. People just assumed that I didn't know anything because they'd never seen me do anything before. And now that audience is amazing towards me, and they're so generous and supportive. And I'm trying to play Counter-Strike more because I watched it, but I'm trying to stream it at the moment. And I do get some people who are horrible, but then I also get a lot of supportive people as well. And I literally play Counter-Strike with the people that watch the pros do it. So when you are part of, when you follow an esport, it's so easy to feel like you're connected, because you have Reddit to talk about matches. And then you obviously have Twitter and Instagram and things like that. So it's so easy to get connected to people. There are people who've never met each other before in real life until they turn up at a tournament together. And the best way to watch a tournament is in an arena with other people, because it is like a normal sporting event. You get so attached to what's happening. I personally get very attached to the players because I follow them around the world, and I see what it's like for them. And I cannot imagine even having to play and having to perform on the stages that they do. So I think esports, it's a properly lean-in experience. And also, a lot of the people who watch esports play the game as well. You don't have to, but a lot of them do. And the audience, they want to emulate their heroes, because their heroes are kind of the same age as them. Like, yeah, I was interviewing a 17-year-old on stage a couple of days ago, and he literally went to the same tournament in 2016 and watched in the audience and got a picture of one of the professional players who was also playing that same tournament in 2019. These kids actually watch these sports knowing that they could one day be up there playing alongside or playing against their heroes. And I don't think that's the same in football. In football, if you don't start when you're 6 years old and get, and I say footballers in soccer, if you don't start when you're super young and get spotted by a talent person and put into an academy early, you're not going to do it. So the best you can do is eat a pucker pie and drink some beer on the sidelines. And there is nothing wrong with that. Take that from a former Crystal Palace season ticket holder. But with esports, there is so much aspiration and there is so much hope. And you can play anywhere.
Yeah, that cycle is so much shorter.
Yeah, you're so much closer to the players. You're so much closer to the players than you are in traditional sports. And that's really exciting.
How do you see like the esports audience like growing outside of, like, beyond people who play like a particular game?
I think that's really important. I think that I wonder with League how many people play the game and how many people watch it. I do think League and Overwatch are games where you get much more experience out of viewing if you do play those games, whereas Counter-Strike you don't. So in terms of the audience widening, I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think it's a case of word of mouth and like getting your friends to, like, we rely on the audience to spread the word for us and to tell their friends, because like when I'm sometimes at a dinner party, for example, or I'm cooking for my friends, or I'm at an event, there might be an important match on that I need to watch. And so I'll often be explaining, I'll be commentating with the sound off just to kind of explain to people what's happening.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Twitch streaming. You know, there's also a unique dynamic, I think, in the world of games, and certainly for someone who does what you do, both being attached to live events but also streaming on Twitch. I was curious, like, what led you to stream on Twitch as a Twitch partner, and maybe what's different about the experience of being in front of a camera, so to speak, on Twitch compared to, you know, when you're doing a live esports event?
So I started streaming on Twitch because when I joined Twitch, I wanted to throw myself in headfirst, which is what I do with every job I've ever had. So I was basically, right, I'm going to learn how to stream, learn what it's all about, get familiar with the community, and then I got Twitch partnered. I was originally streaming from the Twitch office and on my PlayStation directly from the PS4. But then I built myself my first, I did my first self-built PC. So I obviously owned a gaming PC in the past, but I hadn't really used it to its full potential. I was just playing The Sims and stuff on it. and I built my first rig, started streaming Overwatch at home. I was obsessed with Overwatch. Would play indie games, but mostly Overwatch. When I go to the San Francisco office, I'd go in early in the morning and I'd stream. I'd like stream whenever I could. And the thing for Twitch is, it is that very personal relationship. You get to know people through their usernames and you find out so-and-so's got a bad back or this person's having a tough time, this person's going around the world or this person's broken up with a girlfriend. You continue that relationship offline on, well, I say offline, you continue it on the Discord server.
Right.
Initially, my audience was really small, so I think some of the people that used to come to my stream probably don't anymore because it's not the same as it used to be. Because I used to have up to 50 people and now I can have, without some a Twitch partner hosting me, i.e. sending the contents of their chat into mine when they finish streaming, I can have between 150 and 600 people watching me. But yeah, so it's a lot more intimate, I guess. When I am presenting, I'm obviously... It's although I am very much myself on camera, and that's how I've been described when people have met me. I am who I am off camera as I am on. But when I'm streaming, I am definitely a bit less guarded, sometimes probably to my detriment. I don't swear on camera. I might accidentally drop innuendo, but you know, occasionally or whatever. But I'm cheeky on camera. But when I'm streaming, like, I'm any gamer, so I do swear a lot. I don't swear. I try not to swear. I don't insult people. Like, I wouldn't call someone names, but I've definitely used language when people have been misogynist or homophobic or whatever. I will tell someone to get the fuck out of my Twitch chat if they are. If they're making people uncomfortable, they're making me uncomfortable. Because as a woman on the internet, when I'm streaming Counter-Strike, I do have people using horrible language or telling me to get back in the kitchen and things like that. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no place for that. I've got too many people in my chat to bother about losing one person. So
right.
We literally just get rid of them straight away. So I have a lot more power in some ways when I'm streaming on Twitch because I have a team of moderators as well. I can control the tone of my channel, what happens in it, the content and things like that. Whereas, obviously, if I'm doing an esports broadcast, I don't moderate Twitch chat. My biggest problem is I can't stream regularly because I'm not always at home. So I'm lucky that I mostly stream the game that I cover. And so, therefore, that community has a crossover with my stream because they know me, they like the game, and they want to see me play it really badly. And sometimes I get pro players pop up as well. So that's quite exciting for the chat as well. So...
I'm curious how you see the interplay between your hosting role and your streaming, like, because, you know, you do have two different sides of your public personality, and I was curious how you see them in conversation with one another.
I could totally host without streaming. I would not want to be a full-time streamer, so I would say that streaming is something that's been a constant for me in the 3+ years I've been doing gaming, so I wouldn't want to give it up, and I kind of feel like I'm indebted to my original community and I want to be there for them. And I like just hanging out. One of the main reasons for me to stream it at the moment is because playing Counter-Strike and solo queuing to find players is absolutely horrible. So I'd rather play with people from my Twitch chat. And then I get to know the audience more. I'm more present for them. One of the ways that I think I combated the hostility towards me in the first place was I tried to be as present for that audience as much as possible so they could learn to trust me. And so they can come to my stream or they can come to my Twitter or my Instagram and talk to me. And that was really important to me. I think I'm a lot more accessible, in fact, than some of the other casters. And that's also because that's my choice. Some of the casters I work with, they are phenomenally talented people. They've been doing this for years. They don't feel like they have to stream. It's not that they're against it, but they definitely don't need to. And they don't have time to either. Whereas I probably have a few more schedule breaks than they do. And so maybe if I'd been doing it for as long as them, I wouldn't stream. But it's something that I really enjoy doing. But I don't stream for income. I do have some brand sponsorship where streaming may be involved. Like I'm potentially will have something in the future which will require me to do a certain number of streams. And I have a sponsorship with Intel where it's not part of my contract to stream, but I will potentially do some streams where I join other Intel supported creators. And that's really, really fun. So I do want to try and keep streaming for as long as I can.
Can you talk a little bit more about like what the expectations are for working with a brand? What are you often looking for in those kinds of relationships? What makes for a good brand partnership for you, either as a streamer or as a host?
It has to be something that I would actually use myself. My Intel deal is, for me, is just like the most natural thing in the world because I have always used Intel processors. I remember when I was like 8 and we got our Packard Bell computer, and we didn't call it the Packard Bell, we didn't call it the desktop, we called it the Pentium 2, which is named after the processor. And then we got a Pentium 3. So that, like, Intel's just always been a part of my life. And they sponsor a lot of the esports events I do. So ESL have a deal with Intel where I am part of Intel Extreme Masters. So I've done 3 Intel Extreme Masters events this year. I recently did ESL 1 Cologne, which is literally called ESL 1 powered by Intel. So they've supported the esports industry so much, and also the developers. Like, some of the video games today, like, that are coming out, be they indie or AAA, like Marvel's Avengers, they've had support from Intel from the get-go. And that's Square Enix is publishing that. So Intel are present there, and then they're present in much, much smaller games like Planet Zoo, which is a British company called Frontier Development. So for me, like, see, I can passionately talk about them because I believe in what they're doing, and they've literally made gaming better. So I'm so proud to be involved with that. And so my deal with them is based around the fact that I travel a lot. So I have a laptop that's powered by Intel that I can edit podcasts and videos on, but I can also do gameplay and stream as well. I just need to find a hotel room that actually has Ethernet so I can stream. But, you know, I take my mouse, I take my Tenculus, like, which is a small gaming keyboard, with me. So I'm ready. I just need to find the right hotel room.
Yeah.
Hopefully one day.
What do you think companies can, like, learn from you and your work, even if they don't partner with you, if they're interested in the space?
Ooh, I suppose the fact that people like me do exist in esports, it's not all just teenage boys. And actually, a lot of the teenage boys are fantastic that I've met, I know that out of context, that sounds terrible. But all the fans of Counter-Strike that I meet, like, and it's more and more every event, they're just so passionate and they're so enthusiastic. And yeah, they love playing the game themselves and they're so inspired by what they see the players do. So I think talking directly to the audience and getting amongst the audience is really, really important. So that's like the first thing. In terms of working with influencers, I just think being upfront about their relationship is really important, because if you're asking someone to endorse your brand and spend time with it, then you probably should be prepared to pay for that time, especially depending on the size of the creator as well. Because any time you spend away from your stream costs you money, which is something like why Ninja will turn down a 250,000 appearance fee, because he needs to spend time on his stream, because if he disappears from his stream, well, he'll lose all his subscribers. So I would say another thing with brands is just look for the person that represents what you want to represent, type of thing. So I can't really say too much about my next deal, but I know that if a brand wants to work with me, it's probably because they have the same beliefs that I do. So I'm very outspoken in terms of women in gaming and LGBTQ+ representation. I've spoken about that on a few platforms. I don't know if I get into trouble for that or not, but, like, as far as I'm concerned, that's really important to me. So I would never work with a brand that told me I couldn't continue to speak out like that. Obviously, I'm not going to speak about competitors. That's the main thing. If you want to work with me, absolutely fine. Tell me what I can't speak about. Let's contract it. We'll get it so it's, like, clear as day in the writing, you know.
Well, Frankie, thank you so much for making time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. This podcast is produced by Trisha Tonko with help from Anthony Martinez and music by Lucene. If you want to hear more from Frankie, she has a podcast called My Life in Pixels. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please share it with your friends and colleagues and leave us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen. I'd also love to hear from you. You can find me, Jamin Warren, on Twitter at JAMINWAR. You can also find 256, that's spelled out, on Twitter at 256podcast.co, where you can sign up for our newsletter. Thanks so much and take care.